welcome to this week's Word of the Herd Bowl Edition. Looks like the herd is heading to the Boca Raton Bowl. Me and Alex are going to talk about that in a moment, but let's take a quick look back on the Conference USA Championship game. Alex, I believe you were actually at the game this time?
Yes, I was there. Very cold and wet, but it was absolutely worth it.
Just kind of give me a rundown of just, especially the end of the game, just kind of what it was like being in that stadium for what was really the first big game in quite some time, and much less the Herd's first championship in over a decade.
Yeah, it was definitely a cool experience. The first time in 12 years that they hosted a conference championship game and won it. I was there in 2002 for the Leftwich's last game against Toledo. The last time the fans got to storm the field, tear down the goalposts. Although this time, I guess the cops kind of tore down the goalposts and let the fans take it away. But, yeah, it was definitely awesome to be on the field, watch Cato lift the trophy, see the fans celebrate, have a good old time cutting up the goalposts, spraying the champagne around. It was a very good Saturday.
Yeah, I was about to say, I saw your photos and then some just from the Herald-Dispatch and all that, and obviously I wish I wasn't at work watching the game. But, yeah, I'm okay with the police helping take it down, because I'm always, that's like the one thing I worry about when I see anybody tear down a goalpost. It's just like, this is no more than a giant mob of people trying to bring down a giant metal structure. This is just a recipe for disaster.
I think it's more fun that way, but yeah, it's definitely understandable. Probably safer in the long run to just let the cops take it down with whatever tools they had. I'd never seen those things before, but they were pretty efficient in getting the goalpost down. Sitting behind that end zone, I started to notice them take it down with about after Hewitt's interception, and I started thinking, well, what if Marshall screws up? And they almost did with Cato fumbling the snap at the end on the kneel down. It's like, what if Louisiana Tech gets the ball back and they need to kick a field goal? Like, what are they going to do? Timeout, put the goalpost back up. Do they even have the tools in place to do that? That would be that'd be interesting. I don't think you can make Louisiana Tech kick the other way, because obviously on a windy day, I don't know which way the wind was blowing, if it would have helped them or hurt them, but it definitely would have affected it one way or the other.
It wouldn't be the first time the Herd had a jacked up goalpost at one end of the field.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's a shame. I think this is the first year they finally replaced the leaning goalpost of Pisa. I guess the one on the facilities building end is still standing.
Yeah.
But they just put new goalposts up this year, and one of them finally gets torn down for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah, actually, I remember years ago hearing that I guess goalpost manufacturers were now making basically tearaway goalposts for that exact reason. But yeah, the other thing would just be that, it was just nice to see everyone enjoying the moment instead of watching people, you know, sulk out of the stadium with another gut punch type of situation. So it was good to see that the biggest problem after the game was trying to get the goalpost out of the stadium in one piece.
Yeah, for most of the afternoon, it looked like it was going to be, it looked inevitable that it was going to be another sulking out of the stadium type of day as it was the week before against Western Kentucky. But just the offense, every time they got close, it seemed like they'd bite themselves in the ass with a fumble. They were giving easy points away to Louisiana Tech, and it just seemed like one of those days. But finally, they put it together when they absolutely had to.
Yeah. You were there for the Western Kentucky game, too. I guess, was there any visual difference you could tell between team? I mean, attitude, anything like that? Or was it just simply a matter of, I don't know. It just seemed like the Herd had been kind of in a downward trend until Louisiana Tech. Could you tell much of a difference? Or was it just a matter of being on the right side of the score this week instead of Western Kentucky?
I couldn't tell too much of an attitude difference. I mean, that's not something I was looking for. But, I mean, I didn't notice anything. I just think in the Western Kentucky game, it was more of an X's and O's thing. I think the Hilltoppers came in with a great plan offensively. They had some very creative plays on offense to get open and some deep balls. And I think maybe the fact that was senior night and that we had survived a game just 6 days earlier against UAB might have affected the team's mentality, just thinking, well, okay, we've got we've got that hard game out of the way. Now we just need to coast here on senior night and get ready for La Tech. I think that might have been some of the mentality, but I don't think it was physically apparent in the teams the way they behaved or anything.
Well, I'd say kind of the thing, too, just looking at the box score from the championship game, they still racked up 429 total yards. It just was kind of it was more the problem they had. They're only 4 of 15 on third downs and 4 turnovers. I think in recent weeks, it's been kind of like that first half of the Rhode Island game. The offense is moving the ball, but there's just that lack of finishing and, you know, the worst time turnovers possible.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't realize if they didn't watch this game, and it's kind of a shame for the defense because, and no discredit to Louisiana Tech, I think they're a great football team that's actually underrated themselves, but Marshall pretty much dominated this game, even though they trailed for 58 minutes and won by 3. The defense especially, Louisiana Tech had nothing going. Sokol was absolutely shut down. There was no passing game. Kenneth Dixon put up good numbers in the box score. But those were just a few big plays that were immediately after Marshall turnovers. And that was the story of the game as to why it wasn't a comfortable Thundering Herd victory, I think. If you look at Louisiana Tech, they scored 3 touchdowns. All 3 of them were like a play or two immediately after Marshall. Turnovers or the block punt on very short fields. And I think they took advantage of maybe a little bit a letdown in morale after each of those big plays. But, I mean, other than those 3 big plays immediately after the turnovers, they had nothing going on the ground or through the air for pretty much the entire game.
Yeah, Sokol was only 7 of 20 for 72 yards. And, Dixon had 156 on 20 carries and those 3 touchdowns. But I think you're right. The timing of getting their runs was right after those turnovers. So, like you said, just it felt a lot worse than probably what it looked like or whatever I was trying to mean there, but
the opposite of what you said.
Yeah. But yeah, and plus I also think too, there's just a certain bit of I think our our Massey rating would be 37th, and I think maybe that's a little bit more appropriate where Marshall should be this season, just in the sense that I think we're good, obviously, but I think a game like this showed that there's still a few holes in game planning and personnel and things like that. Obviously, it didn't help. Devin Johnson was essentially not a factor in the game. 4 carries, 34 yards, but wasn't a factor. And I think, too, when you game plan for having him and then he's not really available and you end up running Butler and Watson more, that kind of that changes. There's a domino effect there on just you've planned one way and you know they got the win, so that's also kind of always the thing with me too. It's like, you know, it does matter how you play the game, but in the end, you know, it's a W or an L. I think sometimes we forget that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Marshall, I still think they're a top 25 team. I think they should be higher than 37th. I mean, you look at some of those other top 25 teams, they've had some bad games too, some bad losses. So while the Herd hasn't been playing that well in their last 3 games, you can't discount the first 10 games where they're absolutely dominant. And I think that still matters. I think you're right about the Devin Johnson injury. That's certainly affected the offense. And some, I mean, yeah, they played some better teams in UAB, WKU, and La Tech with a couple of tough wins and the loss. But I mean, at the end of the day, some other teams have struggled too, and I think they're a top 25 team, but we'll see. If they are a top 25 team, they have to prove it tomorrow against NIU in the Boca Bowl, and that's going to be a very tough game.
Boca Raton.
Let's start talking about that one.
It sounds exotic.
Boca.
Actually, it's not too bad.
It's a lot less exotic than it sounds.
What'd you say?
It's a lot less exotic than it sounds.
Yeah, I like Miami in that area, but it's like, oh, wait, it's just like, what, north of Miami? Oh, that doesn't sound nearly as interesting.
Yeah, in the stadium of a Conference USA team.
Boo. Well, there might be more fans there for this bowl game than FAU has had all year.
Yeah, they're predicting a sellout or near sellout. Marshall's obviously going to have a pretty strong presence down there with all the South Florida players and a pretty good alumni base for the school in the South in general.
Yeah, I actually have one friend who's snagged a huge allotment of tickets one way or another, and he's handing them out for free to people he knows, and he has about 100 of them, but he's demanding that you wear Kelly Green if you take the ticket. So there should be at least a solid block of Kelly Green, at least in one area of the stadium. But yeah, I've heard good things about the attendance, and it should at least look all right on TV. That's the only thing I ever worry about with some of these odd bowl games. I think the attendance and the bowl sponsor stuff sometimes gets overblown. Like, oh, it's a potato bowl versus is it actually a good football game? Because I watched a Division II game, FCS game the other day, and it was good football. That's all I cared about.
Yeah, the product on the field, and you do want a full crowd. It looks better on TV. I heard there are like maybe 500 people at the potato bowl, but it was a cold, rainy night in Boise with a team from Colorado playing a team from Michigan. So, I mean, you can't really blame the fans not coming out for that.
And right before Christmas.
Right before Christmas, yeah. That's always going to be a factor, too. I don't know. One thing that's really bothered me about Marshall fans after the announcement has been I'm surprised that so many people wanted to go to the Heart of Dallas Bowl over this Boca Raton Bowl. It's really been mind-boggling. I mean, at the end of the day, you play the better team. You want to play the better team, especially if you're a 12-1 team looking to prove yourself. And I get the fact that we haven't played a P5 team all year, and that seems to be the standard that everybody wants to hold themselves to. But come on, 6-6 Illinois is not – they're a P5 team in name only.
And why would you how did playing a P5 team at the end of the year and a bowl team help out Marshall this year?
Yeah, I mean, the win over Maryland last year was nice, and it was good for the team, and – but I don't think that really fed into the hype that we were getting. I think we would have had that hype one way or the other based on our offensive numbers and Cato and everybody coming back. I remember that game maybe got like 15 seconds on SportsCenter last year. In 2011, Houston had the same exact record we do, played in the same exact bowl game against the same mediocre Big Ten team, one with even a bigger profile in Penn State than Illinois. And I don't remember anybody giving them any credit for that. Nobody nationally talked about, oh, Houston, they beat Penn State, they're legitimate. I mean, come on.
Yeah, the Illini only have 6 wins, and those were over Penn State, which is down right now, obviously, Northwestern, Minnesota, which was actually all right, but again, I kind of think that a lot of those bottom teams in the Big Ten are overrated. And then it's Texas State, Western Kentucky, and Youngstown State. I mean,
they struggled against Texas State and Youngstown State.
Yeah, and even that win over Minnesota, I thought that was a little bit more of both teams having any credit for being a Big Ten team versus actually, like, I don't think anybody's thinking Illinois was going to make some noise, no pun intended, in the Big Ten. So, yeah, I would rather play another team getting votes in the top 25 than prove that we're better than an average Big Ten team. I mean, and that's not so much the knock Illinois as much as it's just I think this is a better bowl game, like, as far as the actual play on the field. You can complain about the sponsorship or lack of, or that it's a new bowl, but, I mean, that sounds like just the idiots who argue about college football, and they only seem to know that history happened and have no understanding of anything that's right in front of them. Like, I'm not going to pretend like this is the best bowl matchup of them all, but it's got two teams essentially in the top 30 in the country or around there. So that doesn't sound too bad. If you remove names from everything on this, I bet you a lot more people would be like, oh, yeah, this is a good bowl, but, oh, it's a Boca Raton bowl. Woo. I mean, I thought we cared about football, not the sponsorship. That's kind of doesn't matter to me. Actually, exactly. It doesn't matter to me.
Right. First of all, I will bag on Illinois. They're not even an average Big Ten team. They're a below average Big Ten team. Like, what, 11th out of 14 probably? Just because they're in a bowl game doesn't mean they're any good. They lost at home to 3-9 Purdue. The entire Big West is garbage. You talk about their only good wins over Minnesota. Minnesota is so overrated also. That entire division, it's just the perpetualness of P5. Once they start playing each other, they start to look good because some of them beat each other. And then the Wisconsin and Nebraska, everyone starts talking about how good they are because they suddenly start beating Illinois and Purdue and Northwestern, and they get on a streak. Oh, that 6-3 team in the Big Ten's got to be pretty good because they're in the Big Ten. And then they play Ohio State in the title game and get exposed completely. And that also makes Ohio State look better than they are. That's a different story for a different podcast. But you're absolutely right about the bowl. It's more about the matchup on the field than the sponsor. And it's not like the Heart of Dallas Bowl, some prestigious bowl. It's in like its third or fourth, maybe fifth year, I think. And I don't know what the payouts are, but I've heard that the Conference USA splits the payouts anyway, so it doesn't matter which team gets the payout from which bowl.
Yeah,
they're all going to be split equally at the end of the day.
Oh, and real quick, the Illini's FPI is 82nd, so...
There you go. Well, it's NIU's. I'm sure it's probably in the 30s or 40s.
Give me one moment to look it up and continue ranting about the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Yeah, well, NIU, you play the better team. They've won at least 11 games in the last 5 years, I believe. They've played in the Orange Bowl 2 years ago. They should have... They were one upset in the MAC title game from away from playing in another BCS Bowl last year. So, I mean, you're going to get a lot more credit for beating them than you are from Illinois. I know we're a little bit jaded by the fact that people talked about us not playing a P5 team all year, and we wanted to prove that, but you're not going to get any credit for beating a 6-6, 11th best team in the Big Ten. You're just not. And you talk about what other people view as exciting, as good TV, good notoriety. I've seen several lists come out that like rank the bowl games in order of watchability from 1 to 39. And these aren't scientific polls by any stretch of the imagination, but consistently, I've seen like five of these lists, and they all have the Boca Bowl like in the 10 to 15 range of games you want to watch. And the Heart of Dallas Bowl is in the bottom five in all of them. So I just think you're so wrong if you wanted to see Marshall in the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point about the payouts. I'm pretty sure every conference does a split payout thing. So it doesn't matter if we had to pay to be in this bowl game or something. There's probably going to be a Conference USA team going, so the money is still the same. Marshall doesn't benefit. Like, I remember when a couple years ago when it was Southern Miss and Houston in that Conference USA title game, and we were all making jokes when Houston blew it about what it was costing each program. And I think it was estimated $1 million that year. But the point was that it didn't matter. Everyone just wanted the money one way or another. No one really cared what team was going. And yeah, that it annoys me. People were getting hung up on that part of it instead of, I don't know, you know, football.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, people are going to find a way to complain, I guess, no matter what happens. So, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and you're always going to have the outliers who complain about even the best things that happen to Marshall. But it seemed like more than half of our fan base wanted to go to the Heart of Dallas Bowl, and I just can't fathom why you would want to do that. I guess part of it's the fact that we played three MAC schools this year, and people are, oh, God, we got a fourth MAC school in the schedule now. But, I mean, they're the best team available. You got to play them. Yeah. It does kind of suck that we didn't get a chance to play a so-called P5 team. But, again, Illinois is not going to prove anything.
I will say, to at least the haters' credit, Northern Illinois only has a football power index rating from ESPN.com of 67. But at the same time, too, that's still better than the Illini.
Still better. And they're right there with Marshall, I believe, in the polls and the others receiving votes category.
Yeah. I mean, again, I feel like sometimes, like I write about basketball too, and there's sometimes that disconnect between the casual fans and the people who really do break it down. There's nothing wrong with the way anyone enjoys a sport. I'm not going to argue that, but when people want to try to convince me that, you know, something's better than something else, and I can pretty much simply tell you just from watching it, it's like, no, just you're wrong. Like, and it's often the thing of the name or anything like that instead of learning what you're actually watching in front of you. Yeah, and Northern Illinois would be, let's see, 26th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. They'd be about 32nd, I think, or so. But yeah, the people trying to complain, I don't know what to say to them other than, I don't know, I guess you don't care about actually watching football.
Yeah.
But let's move on to the matchup itself instead of the idiots. What do you know about NIU, and what are you going to be watching for, and what concerns you as far as what they're going to bring against the herd?
Looking at NIU's offense, I think there's, well, they got three guys you got to look at. It starts with Drew Hare, the quarterback. He's a dual threat guy. Nothing too flashy through the air. Pretty good stats, so efficient. Doesn't turn over too much, but he's also a very proficient runner. 850 yards and 8 touchdowns in the year. And it's sort of in that Jordan Lynch mold, following in the footsteps of their great quarterback. Running back, you've got Cameron. I wanted to pronounce the name Stingley because it's more fun that way, but apparently it's Stingley, Cameron Stingley. But the defense seems to be very stingy,
Heyo.
And allowing him to get going up the middle because he's a power back, pretty much the exact same height and weight as Devin Johnson. So obviously we know that can be very scary. He's got 895 yards, 13 touchdowns in the season. And then at receiver, you've got Deron Brown. He's a 1,000-yard receiver, only 6 touchdowns, but he's got almost literally half of Hare's passing. He accounts for almost half of Hare's passing yards for the season, so he's obviously the favorite target and the guy you got to lock down. But overall, I mean, those three guys lead a very efficient offense. They're going to definitely run more than they throw. They're 14th in the country in rushing yards at 252.9 a game. Only 102nd in passing yards, but like I said, they seem to do it pretty efficiently, and that doesn't mean they're bad at throwing the ball. So this is a very competent offense, and it's going to be a tough test for the herd.
Yeah, when I was looking at Hare's numbers, he seems to be the opposite of Cato in the sense of it's a run-first, pass-second scheme, where I feel like Cato usually likes to rely on his arm before letting his legs do any work. I think that's going to be what may keep the herd defense off balance. Is he's not an incredible passing quarterback, but he's definitely good enough to be a threat both ways. I think that you can't overly rely on attacking the run or anything like that. The mutual opponents that Marshall and NIU had, I mean, they both won against them pretty well. Hare struggled a little bit against Ohio, but in general, you know, racked up some stats, you know, a trio of touchdowns for Hare compared to 7 for Cato. But I feel like it has a lot more to do with the style of play for either team than really trying to figure out which one will have that much better of a performance on Saturday. I think it really, it's a cliche, but it comes down to just who's prepared more. And I think if Cato's chucking it deep and isn't hitting the receivers, that's when you get into trouble. If the herd really has to get a couple of those passes going, in my mind, to open up the run game a little bit, because if not, it seems like, you know, they'll take their chances in the secondary and you know, try to, you know, make sure that the run game isn't going to gouge them underneath. But it's tough to say right now, though.
I think it's a great point about the run game, and I think that will be one of the major factors in deciding how well the herd does, because NIU is they're pretty good defense. They're 36th in points against. They're a little bit better against the run than the pass, but I've noticed in their two losses to Arkansas and Central Michigan, the key seemed to be running the ball on their defense. It's hard to take away too much from the Arkansas game because that's an SEC team, and as we've mentioned before on the podcast, when they played UAB, I think Arkansas is probably one of the worst matchups for a G5 team, because the biggest disadvantage those teams sort of have in those games is the line, and Arkansas's line is pretty much an NFL caliber line and so dominant, it's really a tough matchup. So obviously Arkansas did run the ball all over them, but the game that I think we need to look more at is their 17-point home loss to Central Michigan, who is a bowl team, but they finished 3rd or 4th in the MAC West. But in that game, Thomas Rawls for CMU had 270 yards on the ground. And Central Michigan won the time of possession battle 39 to 21 minutes. So being able to run the ball seems to be the key to beating Northern Illinois. Bowling Green certainly didn't do it very well in the MAC championship game where they got blown out. So I think Devin Johnson's health, if he's able to play, that's going to be a huge, huge factor, I think. And he's really going to be needed, I think, for Marshall to keep the NIU's offense off the field and just control the game.
Yeah, that's the only thing that worries me as far as trying to predict this game, because Devin Johnson has obviously just been a huge part of the way the offense has been balanced, and I think there's a lot of reasons for why the herd started to kind of flatline a little bit as the season went on, but I feel like part of it was taking away what had been, you know, half of the offense, and that's no cut to Remy or Butler, I think they come in and do pretty darn well. I mean, obviously, Devin Johnson's the leading running back, but I'm not as critical as some other people when those two come in. Yeah, they're not as good, but, you know, at the same time, we were pretty happy before we figured out Devin Johnson was a really good running back. You know, when Grooms went down, it wasn't like everyone was like, oh, we don't have any running backs. It's like, oh, we still have like two or three more.
Yeah, I mean, in the game, Johnson got hurt against Western Kentucky. We didn't lose that game because he wasn't in the game. I mean, Butler ran for 230-some yards, I believe, and a few touchdowns. So that wasn't the reason we lost that game. But that doesn't mean Devin Johnson wasn't missed, especially against Louisiana Tech. I think that was the game we needed him more because it was more physical. They had a really good run defense, and we needed to kind of soften it up. And while Butler's a great running back, that's not something he's going to do that well. And, I mean, Johnson did try to play in the third quarter of that game and got a few rushes in. And the possession or two that he was in the game, it seemed like the offense was moving the ball a lot better. And pretty much the only success they had on the ground the entire game. Give Louisiana Tech's run defense a lot of credit. But, yeah, Johnson, it's going to be very helpful if he's back. I've heard he's probable and is about 90%. That's just hearsay, though. Who knows? But we'll see. We'll see tomorrow.
Marshall is a 10-point favorite. Do you agree with that line?
I think it's a bit much, honestly. I'm not going to be shocked if they win by more than 10, but I would make the line lower, honestly. I think Marshall's going to win. I think they should be the favorite, but I think they're only a 10-point favorite based on name and the fact that people are going to look at those previous box scores and see these 40-point blowouts of teams and maybe not give the MAC that much credit with Northern Illinois. And everybody knows Cato. Nobody really knows about Drew Hare or Cameron Stingley. So I think that might be sort of Vegas just playing to the casual fan who's going to know more about Marshall than they do about NIU. But I would make Marshall like a 4 to 5 point favorite if I had to make a line.
Yeah, I think sometimes, in football, I think it's sometimes hard to set the line because the possessions aren't as even as in basketball or something, where you kind of feel like at the end of the game, efficiency and probability has ran its course and, you know, that's your result. Whereas in football, I feel like that line gets broken or made by maybe one even inconsequential play late in the game. You know, it could just be a field goal to maybe get NIU within a touchdown or something like that. But yeah, I'd almost take NIU as far as the betting line goes, just because I think there's a chance, A, that they could win the game because they're not a bad team, and B, just because I won't be surprised to see a single-digit difference between these two teams when the whistle blows at the end of the game. So I think you still have to think the herd's going to come out. Maybe clearly is not the right word, but a lot of the numbers and everything seems to tell us that Marshall's the better team, but I think if anyone thinks Marshall's going to easily handle NIU or should expect to handle them easily, I think that might be a bit foolish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to think at this point the team has the mindset they're not going to think that way. But, I mean, there are a lot of distractions for the herd. Obviously, anytime they go to Miami, being around the families for over half the team pretty much is going to be some sort of a distraction. You've got the Doc Holliday coaching carousel concerns that he's maybe interviewing with Pitt.
Dun, 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 dun.
He's said and done all the right things. He's been with the team. Certainly no blame towards him for even talking to them. He absolutely has to for that sort of pay raise. But at the end of the day, that's got to be some sort of distraction, you would think. And
I was going to say, it seems like at least Pitt have they actually gotten rid of their current coach, or has he taken that job yet?
Yeah, he's Wisconsin's coach now.
Okay, I just want to make sure I wasn't misspeaking.
They have a vacancy.
I think Pitt's done a good job of allowing whoever they're going to go with probably to finish out the bowl part of the season. I mean, if you know you can jump on a guy, sure, go for it. But If Doc would happen to go to Pitt and it happens after the bowl, and even if it happened before it, I understand it's business. But especially if it happens after the bowl, I mean, what are you going to complain about? You know, it's a business. The guy can make more money. I can't blame him. And it's not like he's pissing on the herd on the way out or something like that.
Yeah, no blame to Holliday. I think the NCAA should get involved a little bit, actually. I mean, they have all sorts of ridiculous rules that are sort of archaic, but they have all these rules about how often you can contact recruits and when you can contact them for supposedly the welfare and the well-being of the student athlete. It's like, well, if you're that concerned, why not make a rule about coaches can't talk to other athletic directors about jobs during the bowl period? I mean, because that's definitely going to affect the team that whose coach is in that position. I know when Marshall played in 2002 in the GMAC Bowl, I think they would have beaten Louisville either way, but Louisville was obviously demoralized by the fact that their coach had, they pretty much found out during the game, I think, that John L. Smith had taken the Michigan State job. And yeah. They just didn't show up for that game at all. So, I mean that's going to affect the team and the bowl experience of the seniors going out. So, I mean, why not make a rule that you can't contact coaches who are playing in a bowl game until after they're done?
And I don't think the coaches want to be in that position either. I think...
I'm sure they don't, but if you can't pass up the opportunity if someone else... If the school's like, hey, interview now or you're not going to be considered, well, I mean, for that big of a pay raise, you got to talk to them.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like... it's one of those things. I think the NCAA should make a rule because I can't blame the school for trying to get ahead, nor can I blame the coach, but it's not in the coach's or team's best interest to be distracted because... I mean, you win the bowl game, that gives you even more leverage as a coach to, negotiate. Yeah, there just needs to be a rule simply enough because it's not good for the players or the coach, and I don't think anybody other than the schools trying to get ahead, and again, I feel like that's more of a because they know they need to. I don't think anyone wants to be put in that position or put anybody else in that position, really. One random thing. What do you think of quarterback Rakeem Cato wearing number 31 on Tuesday?
Yeah, I saw people on the message boards talking about how that was a distraction also. And I think that one's a bit ridiculous because the team's done it all season. In fact, the only time nobody wore 31 was against Western Kentucky. So, I mean, if anything, someone needs to. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a bowl game. Who cares? I mean, have some fun with it. We're not going to lose a game because Cato wore 31 instead of 12.
I'd say, and to me, distractions aren't the number. Like, that stuff, I always feel like it's overrated, especially, I don't see why anyone is getting that upset about it because, explain to me how this is a distraction other than for 5 minutes he was like, I'm going to wear 31, for Evan McKelvey, you know, and his ACL. Okay, that took 5 minutes and telling the Hurt equipment staff, hey, put a 31 or, you know, whatever my size is and all that. It's just, I'd be more worried about the guys being in Florida near Miami, near their families, and just not even in a bad way, but just being distracted than worried about things like the numbers or I just think some people like to find the cloud on a silver lining, I suppose.
Yeah, again, you're absolutely right. There's not much there as far as the number goes. And we will have names in the back of the jerseys, so that'll be a little bit interesting to see for once.
But I have them memorized, or mostly memorized by now.
It was sort of funny, because every week I was like, all right, who's 31 this... Wait, Evan McKelvey... No, Evan McKelvey still hurt. Crap.
Well, it was funny, because several times this year, when choosing photos from the database for the blog, the photographers had accidentally credited, Evan McKelvey in the photo, because, I mean, they look at the sheet, and it probably had that number and wasn't corrected or something.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. I remember the Southern Miss game was the only game I couldn't see on TV, so it's kind of following the box score. And then in garbage time when Holcomb comes in, the box score briefly gave Corey Tindall credit for like a 40-yard run because they're both number 10. So it's obviously screwing with whoever's doing that. And the same thing, like Devontae Allen will get credit for tackles that Hewitt got because they're both number 6. I'm sort of surprised there's not a rule against that because I can see that sort of being an advantage for the defense to just say, hey, we were going to change your number. And this guy that this monster Neville Hewitt that we've been scheming for all week, it's like, wait, where did he go? Who's out there? Who's that 31? Oh, crap, that's him. He just intercepted Cody Sokol again. Crap, we lost. But yeah, that's a non-issue.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of reasons to be distracted, but, you know, some people are going to... I know we say it all the time, but there's distractions, and then there's 5 minutes of thought, and I'm okay with the 5 minutes it took to switch jerseys.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I actually think Cato's going to step on the field, look down, and not see a 12. He's just going to curl up into a ball in the fetal position. He's not going to know what to do. It's going to be terrible.
Receivers are going to be like, who's this 31 throwing the ball to me?
They're going to think he's a defender or something. They're going to be running away. It's going to be really weird.
Chaos everywhere.
All right. Do you have a score prediction for the bowl game?
I can see it being fairly, for a Marshall game, I'm going to say it's going to be pretty low scoring. I think there's going to be some jitters, a little bit of rust from teams not playing for a little bit. I think these are two pretty good defenses, though, and I don't see either offense lighting up the other one. I can see a game similar to the Maryland game last year. So I'm going to say Marshall 30-24.
I'm going 34-28 with Marshall, kind of along the same line. Obviously, I expect a little bit more offense to happen, but I don't think either team is going to hit some of their normal averages scoring, because I think these are decent defenses facing off against each other and decent offenses. I think Marshall's just a step above NIU, but again, I think if anyone thinks this is a cakewalk, they'll be mistaken, because...
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely not going to be a cakewalk.
Yeah.
This is the best team on our schedule.
Yeah, and I mean, NIU is getting, you know, votes in the AP top 25. I don't know what else to say about them other than they're obviously pretty good at football.
Yeah, and like we said, they've been pretty good at football for the last half decade. They've won 11 games the last 5 years. They've been to a BCS bowl. They held Florida State pretty close in that game until the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
you can't blame them for the loss to Arkansas. And other than that, they just have one little slip up at home against Central Michigan. But I mean, they've won the other 11 games on their schedule, and they've looked very impressive in most of those games, especially the MAC title game.
Exactly.
They seem to have gotten better as the year's gone on, too. Marshall seems to be sliding the other direction, but Marshall's still a team capable of doing what they did the first 10 games.
I think the bowl reset always kind of makes it hard to make these predictions, because it seems like somehow some teams just forget how to play football and others never miss a beat, and they may have went 12 weeks of, you know, looking great, and then, you know, the 2 weeks off, and I think it's one of the weirder things in sports. I can't think of too many other things where you take, you know, a longer break, especially if you have a New Year's type bowl, and then you go back to trying to do what you've done. It's kind of a weird system.
Yeah, it's like a new season. I mean,
like, I always love bowl games, but there's this weird sort of, if we're just purely talking about like the sport and not the effect of what happens, it's kind of like they're almost irrelevant to evaluate teams, because I feel like, you know, obviously if a team's ready after a month, you know, credit on them. But at the same time, too, so many sports about getting into a rhythm, and bowl season just is like, rhythm? What rhythm?
Yeah, I think in bowl season, I do think motivation's the biggest factor in most bowl games, at least outside the playoffs, because in the playoffs and the major BCS bowls, obviously, the teams are going to be motivated to win those. But I mean, some of these games with a 7-5 team versus 6-6 team, it's more about who wants it more. I mean, especially some other factors, like if it's a coach's last game, you'll see a team get more hyped up. I remember, I think Michigan played Florida in the Outback Bowl in Lloyd Carr's last game, and obviously Florida is the better team there, but Michigan beat him because they wanted to send Lloyd Carr out on a high note. Sometimes which team has the most seniors, and because the seniors, it's their very last game, they're going to care a little bit more than some other players perhaps. So I think motivation is a pretty big factor in a lot of these mid-level bowl games. But I don't see any reason for Marshall or NIU to be unmotivated. I think these two teams are going to go at each other hard, and it's essentially a G5 national title game outside of Boise State, and it's a game a lot of people are going to be watching. So I think you'll see a good one.
Anything else you'd like to hit on before we get out of here?
I don't know. That's about all I got.
Me too. I about to say we'll find out if any of these doc rumors have any truth. And obviously, I have nothing but respect for him. You know, and I think one way or another, it's being handled the right way, whether he moves on or not, and whether it's really a serious discussion. Because You know, you hear names thrown out all the time, but I'm trying to think of a good example in another sport, but it seems like sometimes names get thrown about, but nothing ever actually happens. But we'll see. I mean, right now it seems like, you know, I think most of the concerns with that are kind of overblown, at least. You know, I'd rather see some more serious I'd like to hear from some of the sources that we might trust a little bit more that it's actually progressing to serious talks. But we'll see.
The latest rumors seem to suggest that this Narduzzi guy from Michigan State seems to be their number one target. And it's not to the point where it's the formality yet, but it's starting to lean heavily towards him. So I suppose that's pretty good news for Marshall fans.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, as much as we love it and everything, it's still a business, and you know that side of it. You know, I hate at times, but I'm also, you know, just part of it, and we'll just see how that rolls out. Right now, I'm only really worried about whether the team's just got their head on straight. Like we said, they've kind of trended in the wrong direction, with the exception of really the last couple series of plays. I felt like in the Conference USA title game with Louisiana Tech, so. As long as they get it together, I think this is their game to win. But again, this is the best opponent they've played all year, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them in their first real deficit where you're like, I don't know. This could end badly.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It definitely could end up that way. Marshall could dominate. I won't be too surprised by just about any outcome, short of a complete blowout. I don't see that happening for either side.
Sports are weird. It's hard.
Yeah, you never know. But I think the thing we can all agree on is that we're finally ready to get back to some football and watch Cato and Shuler and company go out one last time.
It would be good. And for a lot of those guys, I'm just glad. It's been a steady progression building back the program, but I'm glad to see these guys able to end a chance in on a high note, and if nothing else, really putting the program back where, at least for guys our age, where we're used to it being in that discussion of the top 25, if not in it.
Yeah, I found myself caring a lot more about this bowl game than I have recent ones for the Herd. A, because, I mean, games against Maryland and last year in FIU in 2011, of course you always want to see Marshall win, and bowl games are nice to have the trophies, but it's like, nobody really cares about these games outside of us. And but, I mean, this year with such a, I mean, Cato and Shuler and all these guys, it'd be very sad to see them go out with a loss. And it seems like it would sort of invalidate a season where we were up to 18th at some point. So, I mean, I think it's a huge game for the program to finish 13-1. I think the winner of this game was going to be ranked in the top 25. I'm not going to get into, like, the possibilities, but, I mean, it sets up pretty well. Pretty sure that if we win this game, we will finish in the top 25. So I think that'll be an important distinction to look back in the future and say, hey, we finished 20-something. But, yeah, I think this is a very important game for the program, and I'm excited for it tomorrow.
And if nothing else, it just kind of helps set the tone going into next season, whatever that will bring. But I definitely think that long of a break, momentum doesn't matter, but you'd rather have people's opinion in the program positive to start the year instead of people still complaining about our strength of schedule.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. Yeah, the motivation, it's not going to affect how the team plays, but it will affect how the team is perceived next year. If they finish top 25, you're like, oh, that team's pretty good.
They're all right.
When the preseason rankings come out, we'll get some votes probably, and we get to start out the season against Purdue at home, so that'll be fun.
P5 teams.
Yeah, the juggernaut 3-9 P5 team.
Hey, but it'll be a P5 team that immediately validates our schedule.
That statement sums up pretty much the entire season, and that's a good note to go out on, I think.
All right, well, obviously we'll be cheering for the Herd tomorrow. We hope you guys are too. If you're down there, enjoy it, make a good showing, and as always, go Herd.
Go Herd.